I'm Lillian Vasquez with this special lifestyle edition on KBCR. Thank you for listening. Following the recent news of the tragic passing of comedian Bob Saget, today we decided to re-air my conversation with Bob that was recorded last year. He was just restarting his stand-up career and was excited to get back on the stage and make people laugh. Many knew him as Danny Tanner, the dad on the sitcom Full House. He shared how similar he was to his character, being neat and tidy, and having three daughters of his own. We talked about some of the other projects he worked on, past and present, and what he was planning for the future. He also shared his passion for the Scleroderma Research Foundation in honor of his sister. I'll miss Bob Saget. He leaves behind his legacy as an actor, comedian, activist, author, and most of all, the kind person he was. It was my pleasure to interview him. Here's my conversation with comedian Bob Saget. My guest is actor, comedian, director, producer, author, and podcast host, Bob Saget. Welcome to Lifestyles.
Thank you. So many credits, but yet I'll never get an EGOT.
Many will remember your role as Danny Tanner on Full House or when you hosted America's Funniest Videos. And of course, there's so many other projects over your career. But I'm wondering, will you share how you got the role of Danny Tanner?
Well, it's interesting. I had known the producers of Full House when I used to do the audience warm-up for the show Bosom Buddies with Tom Hanks and Peter Scolari.
Yeah.
And the producers were Tom Miller and Bob Boyette, who brought us Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, and a lot of shows. And Jeff Franklin was the creator of Fuller House and was a friend for years. And I'd known him through other friends. And he wanted me originally for the part of Danny Tanner, but I had a job on CBS, one of my earlier jobs, on the CBS Morning program, which was on against Today Show and Good Morning America. Oh. And it lasted about 9 or 10 months, but I lasted about 5 months because they fired me. But I went into the producer's office, Bob Shanks, who also did a great thing and discovered me and put me on the show with Marriott Hartley and Roland Smith. And 5 months in, he said, "This isn't working out." And I said it at the same time as he did. So we knew. We knew it was time for me to go. I was a little too edgy, they said, a little too hot for morning TV. And then my manager, Brad Gray, called Jeff Franklin and said, "Look, Bob's available now for Full House." And there was a big thing that Miller Boyette shows had done, and a lot of television shows had done, which is they had replaced people that were in their pilots over the years. Robin Williams was not the first Mork. Mark Lynn Baker was not on Perfect Strangers. It's a historical thing that they would switch people if they wanted to get someone to test better. And the rest is history. I just made that show for 8 years, and then we did the 6 years of more of a guest starring role on the Fuller House. But that's how it happened. It was I wasn't going to do it, and I wasn't available. And then when I became available, they really wanted me.
Yeah, and it ended up working well for you, for your career, but it did probably kind of stereotype you, but you have your own personality that is very different than Danny Tanner, so I think
my
you survived
My real personality,
it.
I think, is more like him.
Really?
I think I'm, you know, I'm a dad of three daughters.
Right.
I'm very paternal when it comes to people. I'm very emotional. I am a clean freak. I like things orderly.
Oh, that's funny.
I'm a hugger. I brought hugging and cleaning to the character of Danny more than it was written. And Jeff Franklin and the writers just went, "Well, let's go with that," because I love The Odd Couple and I love Felix Unger. And I said, "Let's copy from the best." And so I was, hugging. I guess the line was, "I'm a lean, clean, hugging machine." And so what people always have trouble understanding, especially if it's a television series, they think that that's you. But, you know, with people with movie careers, they go from, you know, dark to light, from, you know, Robin Williams from Mrs. Doubtfire to a movie like One Hour Photo, which was incredibly dark.
Right.
But, of course, you know Robin for the, may he rest in peace, all the beautiful work that he did. But it was a gift to do the show. I'll always look at it as that. I still feel very responsible. I feel like my comedy should be for people that are... It's really like a 11-year-old that learned a lot of words. That's kind of how my comedy always was. And it got judged by people and got loved by people. But at 17 years old, I was doing stand-up, and that's what my stand-up was. It was just irreverent, weird, askew kind of things. And then I also knew where you do those things and when you do them, and you do them in a club or you do them in a theater as I got more successful. And there's an age limit on that stuff. And with shows for a while, mature audiences only. And I'm not even, because it was Danny Tanner and the video show host, I think people looked at it much more dramatically than it really was, barring a couple of things out of context from the Aristocrats or from a Comedy Central roast. Or
right.
Things that people, you know, the Comedy Central roast was meant on Comedy Central to be seen after 11 or 12 at night. No one thought about it being available for 12-year-olds today online. We never thought about that. It wasn't existing. So it's unfortunate for me that people see stuff that isn't intended for them. And yet, also, I've changed a lot, so I don't. My comedy has changed a lot. It's a lot more thoughtful, a lot more responsible, and I just wouldn't do the same stuff that I did. But that's where I was.
Let me ask you about your 17-year-old Bob Saget.
Yeah.
When you were 12, you knew you wanted to do comedy, and so by 17, you were ready to take it on the road. And where did you grow up?
I was going to go to medical school at Temple University, and I had a teacher in 12th grade as a senior that said, "Don't become a doctor, become a comedian." And the punchline was, "She saved thousands of lives," which is true, because I couldn't do science, I couldn't do math, so I did all pre-med classes for one semester at Temple University. Then I moved over to the film department, and thank God they had an amazing documentary school. And then I went to film school and lived at home working as a deli clerk. I did not have anything handed to me easily except deli meats. And I worked in a deli and made films, and I won the Student Academy Award for a documentary I made about my nephew having his face reconstructed. And he narrated it, and I got flown to L.A., and I met Howard Koch and Steven Spielberg and all the people at the Academy, and I won this Student Merit Documentary Award. And then I went to the Comedy Store, and Mitzi Shore, the owner, said, "You should work here," which was for free at the time. And I did for 8 years. I was one of the house MCs at the Comedy Store. Before that, though, I started comedy at 9. I started making comedy student movies out of 8mm film. So it's probably disintegrated now in my closet downstairs. But yeah, I did comedy at 17. I moved a lot. I didn't have a lot of friends. And comedy is what was a salvation for me. It's like, how do you make a comedian? You make them feel like an outsider. And then also, we had a lot of hardships. There were a lot of deaths in our family. And my dad had a hard time, had a couple heart attacks. And by the time I was in my 20s, had lost two sisters. So it was, it's the things that shape a person that you survive. And so the darkness in my comedy came out of, you know, what are we going to do? What my dad's philosophy is, what are we going to do? And use this, in some ways immature and in some ways highly evolved way of getting you to not dive so deep into something that it causes you mental illness.
Yeah.
So it's not my hall pass by any means, because now here it's almost 65 in May. I've crossed a desert, I think, in terms of just going kind of running rampant with, I'm going to do this for a while, or this kind of comedy, and I'm going to do this kind of, and I'm not any slower in wanting to do it. I still have a rapid way of approaching it as a performer, no matter what I do, whether I'm acting in a movie, which I just did one in the Cayman Islands of all places. But I'm really excited embracing going on tour. I've never been this excited about stand-up in my whole life.
This conversation was recorded in 2021 with actor and Grammy-nominated comedian Bob Saget, who sadly passed away on Sunday, January 8th, at the age of 65. Now that things are opening up, you'll be back on stage doing comedy at the Improv. What are you most looking forward to?
There is something that happens with a live audience that it's indescribable to anyone unless they've done it. And stand-up is not a one-way street. Even, you know, Jerry Seinfeld's famous quote is, it's a discourse, even though he doesn't talk to the audience. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to hear responses, but they are responding. Their laughs are the other part of the conversation.
Right.
The moment I take the microphone out of the stand, it's like slow motion for me. It's like that moment of, it's not a violent moment like taking a sword out of a sheath and going into battle. Mm-hmm. It's a moment of, oh man, this is my living room. And that's the intimacy that you can have in stand-up that you can have in nothing else.
Will your comedy reflect this past year, or what will the flavor be, or will it be different?
It's completely different.
Okay.
I mean, it's really a time of reflection. So, yes, I'm going to talk about what we did. I think most comedians will discuss it. I'm not going to dwell on it. I'm not going to go politics or religion or anything, because why?
Yeah.
Because that's not what I'm there to do. I'm there to entertain them. I have a bunch of new songs that I've written that I get to finally unveil again. Everything's different. When I say something that could be possibly offensive, I will be apologizing for 2 minutes before it and 3 minutes after it. So it could be a long show. You know, it's like my opening comment is probably, I don't want to offend anybody, so good night.
Yeah, you know. Exactly. Yeah. Let me switch gears here. I want to talk about your podcast, Bob Saget's Here For You. I actually listened to one of them with Joe Mantegna. And how did you come to be a podcast host? And how does it make money? How do you make money doing that? And do you like asking the questions?
I love all of it, because I'm not an interviewer, which was my problem from the beginning. But I've also done talk show pilots, done a couple of them over the years, and I've always had a hosting ability. But it's different with a podcast, because the ones that I've been on that I enjoy, Mark Maron, Joe Rogan, it's a conversation. And it's like what we're having right now. I mean, it's an interview, but it's different, because a lot of the guests I have on, I'm friends with.
Sure, right.
I did a Richard Pryor movie when I was 26 with Joe Mantegna,
right.
And he's one of my favorite actors and one of the sweetest people anybody could ever know in their life. So I run the gamut on talking to people. I recently had Candace Cameron Bure, my television daughter, and that goes and gets a lot of press because I defended her for being perky. That was the news story that day. They were out of news. So it's like, you know, she gets criticized because there's haters on all these things for being perky, and she's one of the sweetest, most wonderful person who wakes up. She has very strong faith, and she wakes up feeling a surge of energy and wants to conquer the day. It's just, you know, people will attack you for anything.
Yeah. I want to go back and listen to the one with Candace, because I think she's perky and I like perky. That's nothing wrong with perky. You do so many things as an actor, a comedian, a director, producer, an author, and the podcast host. One of the roles, and this is really going to go back a little bit, that I really enjoyed watching you on was when you did an episode of Law and Order SVU, and you were married to Catherine Bell, who was the character.
Yeah.
And that was really kind of dark. And I thought you did a brilliant job, because it wasn't who I was used to seeing. And I'm like, it was really good. Do you remember doing that?
Oh, I remember everything. Thank goodness.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I remember it really well. And Chris Sarandon was in it, and Bernadette Peters. It was one of their sweeps shows, so they wanted high ratings, and it was a very well-written script and really edgy in a way.
I mean,
I put a computer chip in her arm because I thought she was cheating on me,
and
they called it Hojack on the show instead of Lojack. That was, and that's not a word you would even use now as a joke, but that was where we were at. But I was, of course, not the good guy, because otherwise, you know, if you take your guest star and it's a well-known friendly face from a sitcom, that's not going to be the good guy.
You know, there's been other comedians that have all played. Robin Williams did one, and Martin Short.
Yeah, and
same
John
thing.
Stamos was on there.
Yes.
John did one where he
Fathered all these kids, 26 kids or something like that.
Yep.
I watch a lot of SVU, so there you go.
It was so funny to be in Ice-T. Ice, thank you.
Yeah, Ice-T.
Sometimes I'll say Ice Cube, but I go,
Ice-T.
They go in Ice-T. But I was in Ice-T's dressing room, and his beautiful wife's picture is all over the place, and I didn't touch a thing. They said, he's not on the show this week, you can use his dressing room. It was 1 week of pure tension for me, because I was going, no, I shouldn't be looking at these pictures of Coco. This isn't good. but I remember loving the part. I love acting very, very much. But now that I'm out and on tour, my life, stand-up, the things are in your head. They're rolling in your head. It's like a habit trail. You just go like a hamster on a wheel. And I know the subject matter that I'm going to be talking about.
When we come back, we'll talk baseball, misconceptions, and the work Bob did to raise funds and awareness for scleroderma in honor of his sister. You're listening to Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. We'll be right back. Stay with us. My guest is actor and Grammy-nominated comedian Bob Saget. This past weekend, we received the tragic news that Bob Saget passed away. I had the pleasure of speaking with him last year as he headed back on the road for his stand-up tour and was on his way to perform in the Inland Empire. I was fortunate to have seen his stage show. I want to switch gears to baseball. I hear you're a baseball fan. Do you follow a team here?
I'm a little bit of a sports nerd.
So you stuck with Philadelphia?
The Dodgers are a team that I love very much.
I know you've had the opportunity to sing the national anthem.
Yeah.
Was it for baseball? And
yeah.
That's a challenging song to sing.
You start very low. Go as low as you can where your voice doesn't crackle and start there. And you also have to train for it. And because of having done some musicals and in Broadway stuff, I've had training. I was even on The Masked Singer.
I know.
The national anthem I sang at the Angels game.
Right on.
And I also sang it at the White Sox game in Chicago. I was doing a gig there, and they said, well, on the way, we're going to stop at the stadium. So I went from the airport, and I'm doing warm-up exercises in the car, which really doesn't work, but I did well. You know, I don't do fancy stuff, but I don't modulate like really great singers, but I don't go flat. So I have the ability to not need auto-tune.
Nice.
Which is a good thing. And I've been singing in my shows for years, but trying to sing it at the Angels game, and when you sing Rockets Red Glare, they always fire off Rockets Red Glare.
Yes.
And so
in
they
center
said,
field.
Be aware they're going to do that. And I went, oh, no, because I knew I was going to shake a little bit. You know, and the Rockets Red you know, it's the last thing you expect is an explosion while you're singing.
Yeah, I love baseball, so that's why I was so glad. And I hope you sing another national anthem. I want to switch gears a little bit. I want to get a little serious. In 1996, you produced a movie for ABC Television called For Hope.
Right.
Share why this project was personal and important to you and your charity work. I really want to talk about that.
Oh, thank you. I had a sister. Her name was Gay Saget, and she was an amazing school teacher and, more importantly, an amazing mother. And she had a disease they couldn't diagnose, and it's called scleroderma.
Right.
And they misdiagnosed her a lot. And I was asked by this amazing woman, Sharon Monsky, to perform at a benefit that she called Cool Comedy Hot Cuisine. Robin Williams was the first person who ever did it.
Mm.
They did it at one of her restaurants called City. And it was in L.A. with Susan Feniger, the wonderful chef and dearest friend of mine. And Robin did it, and then many people did it. I did it. I was kind of unknown, and Ellen DeGeneres and Rosie O'Donnell were also there, and they were kind of unknown. I mean, not to me, because we were comedians,
right?
But not household names. And then I ended up, a year later, hosting the event for Sharon. This is over 30 years ago, much more. And then a year later, I found out my sister was diagnosed with this. She had to come home and live with my parents in an apartment in L.A. from Philadelphia. I had to leave Philadelphia.
Wow.
And she was at the benefit one year, and the year after, she was gone. She got a very bad case of it. She was misdiagnosed. The rheumatologist just put her on prednisone and cortisone and did all these horrific things of experimenting because they didn't know what to do, and he had a bit of an ego. And yes, he did try to help her, but that's not how you help people. You don't just put Band-Aids on things. And so there was an organization that Sharon Monsky started that I'd already done the benefits for, the Scleroderma Research Foundation.
Hmm.
And ever since then, for over 30 years, I've been hosting these benefits. I'm on the board of directors, and we've raised over $50 million in research from doing these Cool Comedy Hot Cuisine benefits.
Now, will those be starting back up now that
COVID
is going?
Yeah, we did one in October of 2020, and we raised $1.1 million with a virtual benefit.
Really?
And it was amazing that we were able to do that, because virtually then you can go worldwide.
Sure.
Normally we would do one in Los Angeles at the Beverly Wilshire or in New York, or we would do one in San Francisco where our headquarters are. and we did one in Vegas, but we would do them every year for these 30 years that Sharon Monsky, who's no longer with us and was a hero of mine, started doing these benefits. Thought comedy was the best way because the disease can often be disfiguring, and it's, you know, a difficult thing to go through.
I had never heard of it until I was researching for this interview.
Hundreds of thousands of people have it, and yet it's an orphan disease. Sharon always thought it's because it's mostly women in the prime of their lives in their childbearing years that get it. But it is, it affects children, it affects people of African descent more heavily than a lot of other people, not unlike COVID. It accelerates quicker and affects the lungs more. You can live well with the disease if you're treated properly, and there are new techniques and a lot of new things that have happened as a result of our research and other people's research. And we fund Johns Hopkins and Stanford and UCSF and centers of excellence that have patients and test trials, not unlike what we've watched with COVID, things that no one was really aware of. How do you figure out a disease? How does it happen? And this is what we've been working on, and we're really making progress. And there's more people than what you would call kind of a remission from the disease, whereas the more severe cases, it can go to your lungs and you get pulmonary hypertension and you, your life leaves you. So in 1994, she passed away, my sister Gay. And then in 1996, I made a television movie directed called For Hope that starred Dana Delaney and Henry Cherney and Polly Bergen and Harold Gould, all these wonderful people. And it was on ABC, and it was incredibly well received and did really well in the ratings and helped put the disease on the map.
You have three daughters. Did they follow in your entertainment footsteps?
They are all artists. They all paint and do other mediums of art. My oldest does studio art and oils and other forms of painting and drawing, and my youngest does similar types of things, sketching, painting, and writes as well. And my middle daughter, I always called her the center daughter because the world revolves around her, which is the middle daughter syndrome. She's a welder and the glass blower, and she's actually was commissioned to make a glass tree right in Washington Square Park by the city. She's really doing unusual mediums, and she makes molds out of wax, and then they have to be destroyed, and polyurethane and dangerous chemicals and fire. She's quite the character. They're all remarkable, and I couldn't be, I mean, pride is not the word for what you have when you have kids that you love as much as, and as much pride as I have in all three of them.
Bob, before I let you go, I want to ask you two more things. What do you think is one of the most misconceptions people have of you?
I think probably has to do when my name gets brought up somewhere. People back in years ago would go, oh, he's the dad on that show, but oh, he's very dirty as a comedian. And that to me was always like, well, have you watched all of the other comedians that are, you know, barring the great ones that we all love, you know, Jerry Seinfeld, and I look at Jim Gaffigan and Brian Regan and people that choose to not use language because it makes them more accessible to many. But I kind of started with my comedy as a way of responding to being told, no, don't do that, Bobby, by my mom. And I just wanted to make people laugh. So I think the biggest misconception is that I am anything like that in my daily life. Not that it's a character that I put on, but it was much more so back in my 40s and 50s as I was really going out there touring. It was more of a warrior type of attitude from that stand-up comedy boom that happened, where we were out almost doing rock concerts in a way. And so there is a little bit of a character that's more blown up. And I think people thought that, I don't know, that there was something about me that there was not what they had thought I was. They wanted me to be the dad, which I am. They wanted me to be the good person, which I am. You know? So I think the biggest misconception is that people don't understand that people can have many different sides to them.
You've had so many projects on so many platforms, whether it was stand-up specials, Fuller and Fuller House, independent films like Benjamin, performed on The Masked Singer, which is really interesting, and the host of CMT series Nashville Squares, whatever
right.
that is. But what, at this point in your career, what do you still want to do, or what are you working on next?
Well, none of those last few things. There's a movie I want to direct, and we're getting it set up. So when I'm allowed to talk about it, I'll be talking a lot about it. And that would be something that would happen later this year. And it's a comedy, and it's something that I'm very excited about.
Dark comedy or light comedy?
It's not a dark comedy.
Oh, good.
It is a out-and-out comedy for everybody. And I have two other shows, television shows, in development. So, again, it's too soon to talk about them until we're locked and loaded. Until the ink is dry on the papers. But there's a lot of stuff I'd love to do, and a lot more is happening, which makes me so happy.
I'm so glad to hear that you're doing so much and entertaining yourself. And so, Bob Saget, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute joy.
Oh, thank you so much.
To learn more about Bob Saget's cause, the Scarladerma Research Foundation, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on Today's Show. KVCR sends condolences to the family, friends, and fans of Bob Saget. He is gone too soon, but his memory lives on. Lifestyles will continue its regular time slot tomorrow and every Thursday at 2 and 6:30 p.m. Tune in tomorrow for my conversation with Lisa Vossler-Smith, Modernism Week Executive Director. Modernism Week is an annual event in the Palm Springs area showcasing mid-century modern architecture. Also on the show, I'll speak with Susanna Wolke, who is the tour director for the Broadway musical Waitress, which will be at the Fox Performing Arts Center this month. To hear any of our past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. You can also listen to Lifestyles on your favorite streaming service. Search for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez and take the show on the go. Lifestyles is on Facebook and Instagram. Woohoo! Follow us at 919-LIFESTYLES and search for Lifestyles with Lillian on Instagram. Or go to kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on the social media icons at the top of the page to connect. Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including Sharina Wadd, David Fleming, Sean Houlihan, Natasha Coles, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Our theme music is provided by Ethan Bortnick. Join me Thursday at 2 and 6:30 for Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now.